Today, banks home lending mobbed by a wet lettuce again. Hello again, it's Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics, well, this post covering finance and property news. Well, as I've been highlighting, the lending for mortgages has been growing way faster than inflation, including for investor borrowers. And this is firstly lifting home prices because the growth in credit is one of the strongest levers of home price growth, alongside higher migration. And it also puts more households into high debt to income scenarios, while lifting typical repayments for many by perhaps up to 40% of income. The red warning lights have been flashing for months, and even the Reserve Bank recently warned of rising risks in the latest statement on monetary policy. Investor activity, the RBA analyst wrote, tends to drive housing price dynamics to a greater extent than owner-occupier activity, and investor loans may prove to be a greater risk of default in a severe downturn. This was because investors are more likely to sell if they expect prices to fall, as the property was not their principal place of residence. And certainly through the global financial crisis back in 2007 and 2008, in the UK and elsewhere, this was absolutely true. APRA's latest data, released at the end of October, showed mortgage lending to investors was up 6.7% over the 12 months to $760 billion. Investors accounted for 38% of all mortgages in the 3 months to the June 30th. Banks wrote $9.7 billion in new loans to borrowers at more than six times debt to income in the June quarter, which equates to 7% of new lending. Removing refinancing, the new flows of loans was 5.5%, which is of course well below the peak of 24% in December 2021, but is still way above inflation. The inflation data came out yesterday, and of course that has tended to close out the option of more rate cuts, with some analysts now suggesting the next move will be a rate hike at some point down the track. But now, the wet lettuce regulator APRA has said it plans to limit high debt-to-income home loans to constrain riskier lending from the 1st of February 2026, such that the country's biggest banks will face new restrictions on real estate lending, as regulators say they are preempting the risks that a sudden rise in interest rates or unemployment will collide with increasingly indebted families. APRA has said that it would impose debt-to-income limits on both owner-occupier and investor mortgages for the first time to stop the build-up of risky lending. The moves would restrict lending to the most stretched borrowers to one-fifth of new loans. They say that while overall bank lending standards remain sound, of course they would say that, APRA has observed a pickup in some riskier forms of lending over recent months as interest rates have fallen. Housing credit growth has picked up to above its long-term average and housing prices have risen further. Combined with a resilient labour market, these trends suggest a shift in the financial risk cycle and a potential build-up of vulnerabilities that could undermine banking sector and housing finance resilience if left unchecked. In particular, high debt-to-income lending has started to pick up, albeit from a low base, driven by high debt-to-income loans to investors. This is expected to increase further in this part of the cycle, they said, and already high household indebtedness could increase further. Given those dynamics, APRA is acting now, they said, to constrain the potential build-up of housing-related risk from high debt-to-income lending by activating a debt-to-income lending limit, with support from the Council of Financial Regulators. That's, of course, the mob headed by the RBA, with APRA and other hangers-on all sitting around the table. From the 1st of February next year, the limit on home loans will allow authorised deposit-taking institutions, the banks, to lend up to 20% of their new mortgage lending at debt of six times income or more. The limit will apply separately to ADI's owner-occupier and investor lending. At an aggregate level, the limit is not currently binding, so it is not expected to have a near-term impact on borrowers' access to credit. Only a small number of ADIs are expected to be near the limit of high DTI investor lending at this stage, should levels of high DTI lending rise towards the 20% limit over the coming period, this limit will act as a guardrail and is expected to have greater impact on investors who typically borrow at high debt-to-income ratios compared to owner-occupiers. Chair John Lonsdale said APRA is not prepared to wait for housing-related vulnerabilities to build up before acting. APRA's macroprudential policy tools are designed to mitigate financial stability risks at a system level. One of the key structural risks to system stability that APRA has been long concerned about is high household indebtedness. Rising indebtedness has, in the past, often been associated with an increase in riskier lending and rapid growth in property prices. Which begs the question, why only act now? It's been building for years. At this point, the signs of a build-up in risks are chiefly concentrated in high DTI lending, especially to investors. By activating a debt-to-income limit now, APRA aims to preemptively contain risks building up from this type of lending and strengthen banking and household sector resilience. While strong investor activity can amplify housing lending and price cycles that can impact financial stability, we are not yet seeing signs of the broad-based build-up of housing vulnerabilities, including a deterioration in lending standards that we have seen in previous episodes of strong investor activity. Although broader risks are contained, we have seen in the past that they can build rapidly, and when interest rates are low or declining, borrowers extend themselves and competition among banks for new mortgage lending intensifies, which can lead to easing lending standards. We will consider additional limits, including investor-specific limits, if we see macro financial risk significantly rising or a deterioration in lending standards, Lonsdale said. APRA's debt-to-income limit excludes bridging loans for owner-occupiers and loans for the purchase or the construction of new dwellings. That will enable the smooth functioning of property transactions and avoid constraining incentives for the supply of new housing. And while the limit is applied to all ADIs, there will be some proportionate treatment for smaller ADIs. APRA's other active macroprudential policy tools, the mortgage service buffer and counter-cyclical capital buffer, remain steady at 3% and 1% of risk-weighted assets, respectively. Now, of course, this flies in the face of the banks who've been pushing very hard for a reduction in the mortgage serviceability buffer because interest rates have come down. So APRA and the banks seem to be running a slightly different story at the moment. Now, as for what this means in practice, well, it's perhaps a bit hard to say. Certainly banks will be prevented from lending more than 20% of the value of new mortgages to borrowers with debts of six times their annual income or more. And just to give you a bit of a flavour, that can mean a borrower after $1 million who earns $166,667 a year. Fitch Ratings said that it didn't expect the changes to immediately slow lending, given the restrictions were preemptive. But the major credit rating agency said the limits would mitigate the risk of further significant increase in household debt in Australia. Lower interest rates and rising credit demand will likely push this metric higher, leaving borrowers susceptible to a sharp rise in unemployment or interest rates, analysts at Fitch said. And they also said that 30-day plus arrears for residential mortgage-backed securities had fallen by 8 basis points to 1.13% in the third quarter as interest rates were cut this year, which provided relief to borrowers. But we also know, of course, that many banks have extended and pretended, meaning that people are being offered longer terms and interest-only loans as part of the deal, which, of course, is masking some of the pressure that we're seeing in our surveys. Treasurer Jim Chalmers welcomed the changes and said that they would help with financial resilience and housing affordability. It's about managing emerging risks in our financial system and will help people into the market, he said. These rule changes are an important way for the regulator to reduce risk in our economy, but these efforts will also help when it comes to getting people into homes. I'm not sure how that works on the principle that perhaps people won't be able to borrow as much, but hey, it's a good spin, Jim. Jim is good at spin, of course, as we've been discussing recently. Policies designed to promote financial stability have not been applied to the major banks since 2018. APRA restricted mortgage lending between 2014 and 2018 to rein in risky lending to property investors. At the time they were introduced, lending had jumped ahead of desired levels and the interventions were needed to rein the banks in. We saw prices, of course, home prices, that is, drop as a result. This restriction was announced in late 2014, which required banks to limit lending to housing investors to more than 10% growth over a year. The second, announced in early 2017, imposed limits on interest-only mortgages to 30% of new housing lending. The limits were introduced at a time when mortgage credit was expanding rapidly, while housing prices and household debt were high and rising. Now, no surprise, but of course, the Australian Banking Association Chief Executive Simon Birmingham said, while macroprudential policy settings were important for financial stability, the best way to address housing affordability was to boost supply, and said it was important to maintain headroom on the limits to ensure lending did not shift too much towards non-bank lenders that operate outside APRA's regulation. But of course, he's not really referring to the fact that banks are lending much, much more and at higher risk. So he's not really answering the question. We acknowledge that the targeted and consistent approach taken by APRA to this change, it's important that settings maintain access to safe financing through banks and do not create any barriers that could unduly push borrowers into higher risk non-bank lending, he said. While macroprudential policy settings were important for financial stability, the best way to address housing affordability is to boost supply, and we therefore welcome APRA's exemption of loans for new dwellings. Mortgage brokers were also supportive of the prudential regulation invention. The property market is hot, so this preemptive move is very sensible, said Andrew Panic, Chief Executive of the Mortgage and Finance Association of Australia. This is a measure to cool riskier, high debt-to-income lending, which is just starting to tick up, but we think the impact will be modest. It's worth noting, of course, the Reserve Bank of New Zealand last year put in similar debt-to-income restrictions on new lending for owner-occupiers and investors. And in fact, in my modelling of households, the debt-to-income indicator is actually one of the better measures of stress that we can see. So the bottom line here is that APRA is late to the party, sort of muddling through and just making a little bit of a gesture towards tightening, but in practice it won't have a huge impact. The real issue that we've got is that we are totally reliant on ever rising home prices and therefore high credit lending to try and support the economy, which is narrowing and continues to become less and less productive. And unless we actually change tack, as I discussed in my show yesterday, the truth is that the big banks and the government will be quite happily going down one path, while ordinary Australians are caught in the crosswinds, paying ever more tax, and will find that their income goes less and less around to cover all the cost of living. And by the way, if you decide to measure mortgage stress only in terms of a ratio between income and mortgage payments, you're missing a massive part of the bigger story because, of course, households have multiple requirements to pay for multiple things, not just the mortgage. And at the moment, other costs of living are rising very high, as we saw in the inflation numbers. So that is why my approach to measuring the true mortgage stress in the system is very different. We look at income and expenditure, money in, money out. And on that measure, unfortunately, things look pretty bad, particularly for the rental sector, where 75% or so, three quarters of households in the rental sector have a financial pressure to deal with. And around half of those in the mortgage sector are under financial pressure. So the bottom line here is that APRA's wet letter approach continues. It may sound relatively okay, probably won't have a huge effect actually, and is not really tackling the fundamental structural issues that we have. Meantime, financial stability risks are rising And more importantly, pressures on households are rising, but neither the government nor the regulators seem really that concerned about issues which I think they should be. Now, if you're buying your home in Sydney's contentious market, you don't need to stand alone. This is the time you need to have Edwin Almeida from Ribbon Property Consultants standing alongside you. Buying a property is both challenging and adversarial. The vendor has a professional on their side. Emotions run high, price discovery and price transparency are hard to find, and then there's the wasted time and financial investments that you make. Edwin understands your needs, so why not engage a licensed professional to stand alongside you? With RPC, you know you have experience, knowledge, and master negotiators looking after your best interests. So shoot Ribbon an email at info@ribbonproperty.com.au. And if you use the promo code DFAWTW/Martin, you can get a 10% discount offer. I'm Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Many thanks for watching, and I'll see you again next time.